As we're getting situated with musical chairs with council, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Our next matter on the calendar is A19-1203, in the matter of the welfare of the child of JAR-A, father. And respondents, council, is respondents, council, going to be appearing on this matter?
Yes, Mr. Walter is here for the mother.
Okay.
Respondent mother. My knowledge, the respondent father is not represented.
Okay, so it's just one party here for this matter?
Two, yes. Two are, two.
Oh, okay, okay. Good morning, council. So for this matter, we will have 15 minutes for oral argument by appellant's counsel, 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes by appellant. If you so choose, please approach the podium, state your name for the record and the party you're representing, and council, you may proceed.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mark Fidler. I'm the attorney for the appellants who are the pre-adoptive parents of the child in this case. I think we got a pretty narrow legal issue, Your Honors, and I'll just jump right in and argue that I won't go over the whole brief, if that's fine with the court, but the district court erred as a matter of law in finding that Minnesota Statute 260C.301 Subdivision 1B4 prohibits termination of parental rights where the child has never resided with the parent. And so for shorthand, I'll just call this the palpable unfitness ground.
Can I just inquire, Mr. Fidler, is it the reference to in the court's order to the fact that the father's never met the child that you believe, or your interpretation of that is that's the court's conclusion as a matter of law that therefore?
Right. Yeah, well, the court made three separate findings, and they're set out in bullet form in my brief. One, the court said, you've never had custody, so how do I know whether, you've been unfit before the child, and you haven't had a chance to prove your unfitness, so that was one ground. And then that was kind of mushed together with the other issue that there was no, that the offenses we cited, there were 16 offenses, that none of them were what the court deemed predatory offenses. And then the other factor was that the court said that we hadn't shown that the parent had lost custody of a child in another proceeding. So basically what the court did was take three different statutes and kind of morph them into one sort of uber statute that we didn't meet. and so I think the problem is when you take out all those legal errors, one, the subdivision 1B4 doesn't require predatory behavior. It doesn't require a finding of egregious harm. It doesn't require pre-existing custody of any sort. And the statute permits you to proceed based on a presumption. It doesn't require the existence of the presumption in order to establish grounds for termination.
The reason I was inquiring, Mr. Fidler, is I didn't read the order so much, but maybe that to mean as a matter of law, one could never have a prima facie basis and ultimately a palpably unfit in a situation where a parent has never met the child. But is that how you believe that's how the court had ruled versus simply that was a factor because that's an undisputed fact here, as I understand?
Right, right. No, I think that's the problem with the court's finding, that you could never prove unfitness if the father had never had custody. And so when you look at the statute, it's stated very clearly in the disjunctive. So arguably, the first part of the sentence, A parent is probably unfit to be a party to the parent-child relationship because of a consistent pattern of conduct before the child.
What does that mean?
I think that means, well, it has to include where you're parenting, I think, that you're before the child. The statute doesn't say, but I think the statute's broad enough to certainly encompass that fact. You know, parenting, you're before the child.
Could it also mean before the child is born?
Oh, before the child is born?
Mm-hmm. Is that a reasonable interpretation? So situations where, you know, a child is born and we're looking at your past history.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there's no child if the child's not born. So the statute talks about a pattern of specific conduct before, not the fetus, but before the child. So I think it necessarily contemplates post-birth specific conduct. But in any event, leaving that aside, the statute very clearly uses the disjunctive or of specific conditions relating to the parent-child relationship. And so that's a very, very broad definition, specific conditions relating to the parent-child relationship. And so I think for good reasons, the statute doesn't delineate exactly what those conditions are, because they could vary depending on the context of the case.
Could it be that, Mr. Fidler, that the judge was referring to predatory offender type, and I assume the implication involving children, in other words, as the victims, could it be that that's the provision that the judge was looking at in terms of whether the allegations of criminal behavior affect the parent-child relationship, directly relates to a parent-child relationship?
Well, maybe so, but then what the court is doing is conflating two different grounds for termination. And as the Minnesota Supreme Court held in several cases, I cited one, LAF, the petitioner only needs to establish one ground. And so the fact that we don't have proof of an element and another ground doesn't mean we haven't proved, haven't established a prima facie case. And that's the important point here, is that we are not saying the issue before you is to whether to terminate parental rights or before Judge Manning. It's do we have enough evidence to go forward to inquire more deeply and get into discovery? And that's the problem, is the court short-circuited that process. So did the petition put respondent on fair notice of what was being alleged? I think we did. We alleged you have a problem of chronicity of criminality.
That was the question I had. And what specific part of that meets the second half of that? If I understand the reference you're making, the second portion of parentheses four, specific conditions directly related to the parent and child relationship. Do you believe simply an allegation of criminal behavior, where there's no allegation of children being involved in that criminal behavior, is still sufficient evidence because one's been convicted of crimes that it directly affects that relationship?
Well, first of all, the statute says nothing about convictions, and we're talking about findings of probable cause in every one of those instances. So we have 16 instances of probable cause of a crime being committed, some of which were aggravated. So, you know what it takes to aggravate a criminal offense? It takes some pretty serious criminal conduct that goes to issues of a propensity for anger, impulse control.
But so you don't believe there needs to be a specific tie-in, as the statute references, to that, those probable cause findings as the specific conditions, without tying it directly related to a parent-child relationship? In other words, children don't need to be involved, is your point, but simply one who's been alleged to commit crimes, therefore.
Right. It's character, essentially. You know, and your propensity for violence, you know, your propensity to be out of action because you're in jail. That is a problem that you can't parent if you're in jail. It's kind of an old-fashioned idea. But we think that that's a specific condition. The other thing we alleged, based on information from the mother, ironically, was that the father had a drug overdose, was hospitalized, and had brain damage. And do we? And we have to get to the bottom of that also. And that is, if the father has a material condition with his brain, you know, that is a specific condition relevant to his ability to parent.
Counsel, the case law is pretty clear that you can't terminate simply because somebody is in jail, somebody has chemical dependency issues, someone has limited cognitive functioning, simply because somebody has mental health issues. In order to terminate based on those circumstances, the petitioner must present evidence showing that those circumstances impact parenting and how they've impacted parenting. How does your petition link the assertions you've made about father's shortcomings with his parenting skills or lack thereof?
Well, in a way, I've got the same problem that the court had by your question, that if you want to have the requirement that the father be with the child, then you can see specific instances of conditions relevant to parenting. In the absence of that, what do you do? I think by all you can do is say, what are the facts that we've alleged?
Did you allege any facts about his housing situation?
I do not believe we did.
His employment or income?
Nope. And you know, this might be a different argument if we were here after a termination trial and say we'd won or lost on the issue of termination of parental rights. Then you would have had discovery. You would have had a fuller record, direct examination, cross-examination of the father, probing into, you know, what's going on.
What sort of, as a petitioner, what sort of discovery would you have been entitled to from father under the rules of juvenile protection that would have given you information about his housing, his employment, his income, his resources, his family?
The rules say that if the condition of somebody's the rule, the mental condition is in controversy. We alleged a controversy over his mental health. I think we had the right to, assuming the petition went forward, to get medical records. We wanted to go down to HCMC and get records of what happened. I think that's really relevant. And the overarching question here is, you know, what is in the best interest of the child? And so I think you have to examine this whole issue of prima facie case in terms of, is it in the best interest of the child for the case to go forward? And is it in the best interest of the child for you to send this back to the district court?
But don't we also have to ask whether, assuming all the facts alleged in the termination petition are true, they would support termination under the alleged statutory ground?
Indeed.
So how do we do that if there are no allegations in the petition directly connecting the allegations regarding father's shortcomings with his parenting skills or lack thereof, which is clearly required by the case law?
Think that the facts that we have alleged do directly relate to the parent-child relationship. Is the fact that you commit a terroristic threat, is that at all relevant to the parent-child relationship? I think it is.
And you reference Mr. Fidler.
The fact that you've got 15 other criminal probable cause findings, and by the way, this is evidence as of April 2019, and given the chronicity of this father's behavior, what do you bet the odds are that there's more offenses that if we went back to the district court, the court would have an opportunity to examine those as well? And so, you know, even respondent agreed with us on the law that the judge got it wrong. So I think the question we're talking about here is really the remedy. And
can I just clarify that point? As I underread it, and of course he can respond to a moment, that he believed the first half of that, the two part of that subdivision, the judge may have gotten wrong, but not the second half, which I understand is the provision that your client's relying on in the petition.
Yeah.
These specific conditions as opposed to the pattern of specific conduct.
Well, he's saying that it didn't require any pre-existing custody, so he agreed with me on that, mm-hmm. whether it's in the first
I
part
see.
Or the second part. And he says, as Your Honor is saying, well, why don't we just cut to the chase and just say, okay, based on what we can see in this petition, there's not enough evidence to support a finding of prima facie case. And again, we're not talking about, do you have clear and convincing evidence to support termination? Is there evidence of a prima facie case? And then...
But what's the prima facie standard? Because in other contexts, for example, I think punitive damages, where you have to make a prima facie case, the case law says, yes, it's a prima facie case, but the standard's clear and convincing, so you have to view it through a clear and convincing lens. So it's a prima facie case in a case where the burden of proof is preponderance of the evidence is different than a prima facie case where the burden is clear and convincing evidence. So doesn't that clear and convincing evidence standard have some relevance to the determination?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the law, it was LLP, says the district court must accept the facts and the supporting documents as true. You must.
True, and then
right.
saying,
so the,
accepting them as true and recognizing that the burden of proof is clear and convincing evidence, are these clear facts adequate to sustain the termination?
I do not believe that the clear and convincing standard applies at that phase. And I think it makes sense to distinguish between the constitutional requirements of burdens of proof with regard to a father who's had custody, like Stanley versus Illinois, Lair versus Robertson, versus somebody who's never had custody. What we have is a biological parent-child relationship. But I see I'm out of time, and I just wanted to draw the court's attention to Juvenile Protection Rule 34.03 sub 3, and that states what happens if the district court finds that there's not a prima facie case. The court has four options. Return the child to the parent, give us 10 days to amend to provide supplementary information, give us 10 days to file a CHIPS, or dismiss the TPR.
Is there anything that prevents you from filing another petition with more information regarding father's circumstances and how those might relate to a parent-child relationship?
Well, I'm not going to take away my right to do that, so I'm not, I'd have to say
I'm not aware of anything
I'm not, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel, and you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Ron Walters. I am the attorney for the respondent mother in this case. I think I'll just begin by clarifying where exactly I agree with the appellants, and I agree that the statute allows for TPR petitions to allege either specific conduct or specific conditions that bear on one's ability to parent. I think that the best illustration of the kind of conditions that I think would survive prima facie scrutiny, it's described in my brief as someone that's potentially permanently incapacitated. Somebody that is, we know from common observations that their ability to parent is going to be sustained and throughout the minority of the child continue to be a problem. And so I do think that there are circumstances that can be pled to survive prima facie scrutiny about general conditions that would prevent somebody from parenting.
Counsel, isn't the state of the law currently that if a person's been convicted of certain types of predatory offenses, the county is required, mandated, to file a termination of parental rights petition?
Yes, that's correct.
So the legislature has already determined that there are circumstances where, even if you've never seen your child, if you have a certain criminal conviction, there must be a termination of parental rights proceeding.
Right.
And I think that seems obvious.
Yes. And I think what the briefing on both sides does is try to parse out that the status offenses that give rise to mandatory terminations are different from, you know, even general sustained criminal activity that doesn't rise to that level because it, you know, hasn't been harmful enough to the person or what have you. So we agree that there can be conditions that you can plead that can say these conditions are general enough that somebody is palpably unfit. But when you really think about what palpable means, and in my brief I talk about how it's not a defined term in the statute, it's not defined in Black's Law Dictionary, but a common sense definition of the word is that it should be so common that you can like sense it with your physical senses. You can touch it, you can taste it, you can be in the room around somebody that's palpably unfit, and it should be pretty obvious that they're palpably unfit. It shouldn't be something that takes a tremendous amount of discovery or a tremendous amount of digging to actually establish. And my position is that the petition that was submitted here was just too bare in terms of what it alleged to survive prima facie scrutiny. I will agree with the appellant all day that there can be conditions, and I feel myself circling back to that again, but I'll just go on to say that what was pled here is just kind of a garden variety person in the system. This is not somebody that, on the face of it, you can tell they should have no right to parent their child, and just by the allegations that are made, should be made subject to go through an entire termination proceeding.
Mr. And Walter, do you have in terms of the prima facie, do you have an opinion, or does it differ from Mr. Fidler's in terms of the relevance of the clear and convincing standard? Is that important to us to consider as to whether prima facie evidence is present?
I do agree with that analysis. I do think you have to have an eye to what ultimately would need to be alleged at trial, and knowing that you're still drawing all of the inferences in favor of the pleading party, but that you know that their burden at trial is ultimately a pretty high one, and so they have to be stating a case that on the face of it, you could say, yeah, if this was fleshed out, this was proven to be what it is, then you would have a compelling case for termination. And here, I just don't think that that was alleged. I don't think they knew enough about the father in this case to make those allegations. What the petition reads like is that they could get his public criminal history, which includes both arrest and convictions, throw it all in there, allege bare facts about a traumatic brain injury, and that's all they think they needed to proceed with the case. And while I don't agree with, you know, Judge Manning on how he read the statute, I still think it was a bare petition, and I still think the result should be affirmed.
Mr. Walter, if you were drafting the petition for petitioner, do you agree that with some additional facts, and you can tell me if you do, what those would be hypothetically to tie in the criminal behavior to fit the statute so that you get past prima facie? What would be an example? And perhaps short of you mentioned the mental health, someone's incapacity, that would be an obvious, I suppose, you'd have a doctor and you put it in there. But do you agree there
For example, I think I mentioned this in my brief, that there's no allegation about warrants being out. You know, warrants for arrest is not something where it shows that somebody has not just had some criminal past, but they currently are not engaging with the justice system as expected. And if they get pulled over with a child in the car, you know, there's going to be an issue about what do we do with your warrant, and are, you know, while this kid is here, you know, is grandma going to come, or, you know, what have you. So something like a warrant, I think, you know, would, without getting into the level of a status offense, could be, you know, something about, could point more towards palpable unfitness. But just a history of arrests and a few convictions, I don't think it gets you there. There's plenty of people that have these kinds of records that are doing just fine parenting. And so it's got to be more than garden variety, I think. I think it's got to be something that really points towards palpable unfitness in a strong way. If there's no other questions, I'll yield the rest of my time. Okay, thank you.
Counsel.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I kind of rushed at the end of my opening, just that the court understands that under Rule 3403, the process that the court goes through. Now, assuming the court did a correct legal analysis and said, okay, we don't have to have pre-existing custody, I don't need predatory behavior, I don't need the three errors. So then the question is, are these facts alleged? Do I have any other evidence? You know, because the rule specifically allows me to provide supplementary evidence, to make offers of proof of subsequent facts. And those are all factors that the district court should be making those findings in the first instance, not the Court of Appeals.
Did you attempt to do that?
What's that?
Did you attempt to do that? I mean, as I understand it, there was no motion to dismiss for failure to show a prima facie case. The district court raised this. Did you say, Judge, we want to continue this because we want to supplement our petition if you have concerns regarding its adequacy?
My co-counsel argued that motion hearing, and we said, Your Honor, we do have other evidence of criminal activity subsequent. And he said, I don't need to hear any of that, that the judge had made up his mind. And we think that was error. And any normal person is going to say, okay, terroristic threats, aggravated auto theft, aggravated. There's some problems relating to impulse control, to anger, emotional management, regulation. These are kind of, I think, important factors that go to directly relate to the ability to parent.
They absolutely do.
Yes.
However, we're bound by the case law from the Supreme Court, which says there has to be a connection shown. So are we wrong to look at the petition and say, where's the connection alleged that would allow a termination to survive review by the Supreme Court,
right,
which has clearly said you can't terminate simply because somebody
right
is in prison, has mental health issues, has chemical dependency issues?
I totally agree, Your Honor. And I'm not asking you to support termination here. I'm asking you to say that we had enough evidence to go forward.
Well, I mean, to go forward, it sounds like you're saying to investigate. What stopped you from investigating father's circumstances and bringing more information to the court that would have made that connection?
We were investigating, and we shared with the father's counsel 60 pages of police reports. But the court cut us off, so we didn't get out of the gate. So we just want a chance to get out of the gate, to prove our case, to apply the clear and convincing evidence standard at an evidentiary hearing.
Can I just clarify, isn't the gate the petition for purposes of the court's review of prima facie evidence?
Right. Right.
So the court did review the gate that was created by your client?
The court gave us a narrow gate and said, you don't fit through it. And I think that was the problem, that the court very narrowly construed the statute and given a broader gate and given a fair interpretation of what directly relating to specific conditions. Conditions about what? Just not in general. The statute talks about relevant to the child's emotional, relevant to the ongoing physical, mental, or emotional needs of the child. It's a very, very broad statute.
So if we were to accept your argument and we were to publish this case, might our syllabus point say a private petitioner establishes or the county establishes a prima facie case in support of termination of parental rights by showing that the parent has been accused and or convicted of crimes?
And that the crimes relate to the capacity to parent.
But you're essentially saying we all just know that having been charged with crimes and convicted of crimes, that automatically satisfies the second part of your equation. You don't have to actually show the person doesn't have housing, the person doesn't have a job, person is homeless, et cetera.
I think it depends on the crimes. I mean, you have to look at the crimes alleged. You know, we weren't just alleging garden variety crimes, just plain old auto theft. Aggravated is a big difference. Terroristic threats is a big difference. So we just want you to consider those differences, Your Honor, and reverse the opinion of the court below. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. We will be issuing an order within the statutory time frame, and this would be a shortened one, expedited one. Thank you all. Good morning, counsel. The next case on our calendar is A19-0821 in the matter of the welfare of the children of DRW. Counsel, I understand that it'll just be you arguing, correct?
Correct.
As the respondent did not file any briefs and is